Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of defending positions. It's been said, I know because I said it, that there are two political parties in this country, the Democratic Party and the Undemocratic Party. Indeed, if Republican icons like Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, and even Barry Goldwater saw what the Republican Party has devolved to, they would flip in their crypts. The blatant heartlessness, self-centered short-sightedness, downright insanity of a political party that's become a little bit more than a toxic cult would certainly make the Democrats seem like a sane and viable alternative, right? Well, here's the elephant and the donkey in the living room. In a political system where it costs the average senator $14,000 a day to finance their reelection campaign, the oligarchs have a well-established foothold in that party, too. Our guest on Wiki Politiki this week, journalist, activist, and author Norman Solomon, has been involved with progressive politics for decades, working to move the Democratic Party beyond the identity issues that they've used to cobble coalitions to addressing the identical issues we all face, like a clean environment and environmental justice. Norman Solomon is an American journalist, media critic, author, and activist. His dozen books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, a full-length documentary film narrated by Sean Penn was based on War Made Easy. Norman is a founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a consortium of policy researchers and analysts, and he's co-founder and national coordinator of the online organization RootsAction.org, which now has 1.5 million active supporters. He's appeared as a guest on many media outlets, including the PBS NewsHour, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, Democracy Now!, C-SPAN's Washington Journal, Public Radio's Marketplace, and NPR's All Things Considered. In 2016, he was elected as a Bernie Sanders delegate to the Democratic National Convention, where he was coordinator of the Independent Bernie Delegates Network. In 2012, running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives from California's 2nd Congressional District, he came within 0.1% of less than a percentage point of getting through the primary. I'm sure we're going to have a very interesting conversation about the convention last time and the election this time. Welcome, Norman.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Good. Now, full disclosure here. I've known Norman for 50 years, since he was a student activist at Montgomery Blair High School in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I was involved with starting an alternative high school in Washington, D.C., and Norman, in fact, helped that school get started. So perhaps we can talk about that a bit later, but for now, in present time, it certainly seems as if the rank-and-file Democratic voters want policies that include economic justice, universal health care, and even curtailing military-industrial complex and military spending. Why has this viewpoint in our lifetime consistently remained unrepresented?
Well, as you say, Steve, I think the rank-and-file voters are way ahead of most of the elected Democrats, and let alone the plutocratic dinosaurs who call themselves Republicans. As you said a couple of minutes ago, the oligarchs have, as you put it, a well-established foothold in the Democratic Party. And so, who are the officials who are Democrats, D after their name, in the Senate and the House? Who are they going to believe, their own cash flow from the oligarchs and the wealthy, or the demands and desires of most constituents? And given the corporate media and the messaging, way things are framed, we're still up against the corporate wall. And as you said, when you get to the actual identifiable concerns, interests, day-to-day needs of people, healthcare, education, housing, neonatal care, young people, elderly care, so many things that are so omnipresent, the environmental degradation, people really care about. And so I think it's the disconnect between business as usual at the top and down here on the ground, what we're dealing with.
Well, that's a pretty good analysis of it, and it seems to have been the case, I guess, since the first Clinton administration. How do we address this? I mean, I can see that you've been at this since you were a kid. You know, since you painted the parking meters.
Yeah, Steve. You know, you knew me before I was born. It's been so long ago.
That's right. You've been reincarnated.
Right.
You started out as a student activist in Montgomery County, Maryland, and maybe this is a good time to talk a little bit about what got you started in that, and you've basically stayed on this track for your entire adult work life. What got you started with that?
Well, I was pretty straight arrow. You know, I wanted to get into a quote-unquote good college, always get good grades, please the elders of the community, not to say the wise necessarily of the community, until I hit about age 15 or 16. And while the civil rights movement dislodged some of my certainties about the way the system operated, it was really the Vietnam War and the system response to it that blew my mind. So having been born in 1951, by 1967, seeing the war escalate, seeing the military-industrial complex at work, the cultural aspects of demanding conformity, and the way in which the news media and quote-unquote authorities simply went along and stoked the fires of conflagration and destruction in Vietnam, that just really caused me to think about not only what was happening far away, but my own role as a high school student. And getting involved in the anti-war movement really set me on a course that, you know, in retrospect has continued, as you say, for 50 years.
Yeah. And that's certainly been true. You were a writer. I remember you wrote for alternative publications when you lived up in Oregon and so on. And that's been pretty steady. You've worked with the Progressive Democrats. You've worked with the Bernie campaign. And after all of this time, what do you see at this point is the leverage point, given all your experience? What at this point can be different because it's been so the same over the past several decades?
Well, I love the word you use, upwising. I think people are, through wisdom that hopefully comes from experience, people are rising to try to achieve and sometimes reaching towards effectively our better selves and possibilities. And I think that it's hard for the mass media, even well-intentioned journalists, let alone pollsters, to grasp and measure what happens, which, as James Baldwin says, is the internal that can change history. What happens inside people's spirits can evolve and have an impact on the course of events that are usually seen as very macro and just, you know, the big historical events. And I think that we've seen that percolating. I think of it as in daily lives, how people learn and interact and create together. And that's hitting or bouncing against or pushing against the walls of the same old, the political economy, the way that the social structures are imposed on people. So when we don't feel we have an option, we more or less conform, or we're, you know, there's, I think of the horrific opioid use and so forth, and the way in which people confronted with sometimes literally unlivable situations have to somehow deal with it. And yet I think there's been tremendous creativity culturally, music, art, ways that people have tried to respond to our current situation. And of course, the activism around climate, around war, around social justice, challenging racism, trying to create societies that are more, and cultures and communities that are more egalitarian and nurturing instead of destructive of people's individuality and collectivity. You know, this tension between, we all are, let's face it, we're animals, for good and maybe ill. And so we do have a survival lookout for myself, but there's also the collective effort that we would never make it out of the gate if we weren't taking care of each other. That's been true of humanity in the cave or whatever. So, you know, long story short, I think that we're challenging and we're up against some very anti-life forces, if you will, or institutions. The way that Wall Street makes a killing, literally and figuratively, against or from war, the way in which fossil fuels are so destructive. And, you know, that's one force. And then there's a counterforce, which is people's alive efforts to create together for a better future.
Are people, you know, I really loved your book and then the documentary that was made, War Made Easy, because you basically you took the what the Robert McNamara and company were saying to promote the Vietnam War, and it was pretty much the exact same words that were being used to promote the war in Iraq. And I think that it's interesting and paradoxical, maybe, that there are people on the alt-right who are in a certain way more active and more hip about how we get manipulated by the media and our government to march in lockstep for these wars, support your, you know, support the troops and so on. Censorship of Phil Donahue, your colleague Phil Donahue, and so we're definitely up against a media. On one hand, we have a media that you know, we have the mainstream media in which certain things cannot be talked about. You can't. They try to discourage certain conversations, and then you have the alternative media, which in some ways it's absolutely crazy and filled with disinformation, and people have become so distrustful of what they see and hear, and often they throw out the good stuff and they accept the bad stuff. As somebody who's been involved with the media pretty much all your life, how do you walk this line between, you know, what is the real alternative media in this country?
I think independence is really crucial. The hand that's signing the paycheck, the corporate power, not only ownership, but advertising and underwriting, which is the advertising euphemism of public broadcasting or so-called public broadcasting, it's very hard to move beyond those constraints. And it's manifested in many ways, including that you have daily newspapers with business sections. None of them have labor sections or environmental sections and so forth. And so getting beyond those constraints really requires, well, outlets like we're talking on right now, a progressive radio network. Online, we have thousands, literally, of progressive websites taking advantage of the relatively low barriers to entry financially compared to traditional media. And yet the internet, as the scholar Robert McChesney has pointed out, has been the location of the fastest takeover of a new technology by corporations in American history. And the same media outlets that dominate print and traditional broadcast, when you look at the numbers, for the most part, they're dominating the internet as well. So it's a constant for the system. They might see it as whack-a-mole, that creativity from the grassroots is always trying to disrupt the dominant paradigms that have been so destructive. And we need to, whether it's with chewing gum and rubber bands or maybe more sophisticated material, progressive people or whatever you want to call those who are trying to create a better future, we have this challenge to and the opportunity to outmatch. We'll never match the money. We've got to outmatch with creativity and capacity to bond together in terms of organizing. And Steve, what you were saying about war, I think that partisanship is so destructive because we've seen time and again when Democrats are running a war, then many people who oppose wars when Republicans are running them clam up, and often vice versa. And what we need is a single standard of human rights so that we're not buffeted around by these party allegiances.
You know, I think you're right on target with that, because people at election time, people will devolve to the what they perceive to be the lesser evil, and so that's what happened in 2016. We could talk a little bit about that. 2016, as I traveled around the country, when you talk to people, the question was, "So, who are you voting against in the election?" You know, and so that's really, we had probably the two worst candidates you can imagine. And so what happens is people get polarized into these wedge issues that keep people pretty much separate. And then at election time, they either stay home because they're disgusted, or they give over to whatever tribe they're with, and they go for that lesser evil. And, you know, there has to be a way of bringing well-meaning, well-intentioned people together, independent of these two political parties.
I think coalition building is really crucial, and eyes on the prize and principles and issues. And really, I often come back to the phrase single standard, whether it's about war or human rights or at home. We'd rather feed people than kill people. We'd rather have health care for everybody than for those who can afford it. And these are just sort of basic principles, and they can be shafted and abandoned by all sorts of political leaders, and that just shouldn't be acceptable.
Well, good. We're going to take a short break, Norman, and we'll be back after this message, back with Wiki Politiki and talking with Norman Solomon about our current political new word situation. Steve Behrman will be back.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wound, sir?
911, what's your emergency?
Please, help. My son shot his brother.
911, what's your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, we're back with Norman Solomon, our guest today on Wiki Politiki. Norman, very recently you wrote an article about the conflict between the Bernie progressive wing and the Elizabeth Warren progressive wing. It was called Not Bernie Us, Not Elizabeth Us. How can first of all, the progressive wing unite and prevail? And then second, in the general election, how do we deal with the split in the party? Is this like two separate European political parties that have to form a coalition to defeat the worst toxic force of all? Or how do we move forward?
Well, my feeling is that somehow the Bernie Sanders forces that I'm aligned with and working on behalf of, not part of the campaign officially, but working to advance, and the Elizabeth Warren forces, we need to be in cooperation. And while overtly there's a competition for votes coming up in Iowa and so forth, it's not a zero-sum enterprise if we understand the reality. It's really, I believe, when you come to questions of corporate power, which are so profound, it's a choice, it's a fork in the road coming up with profound implications. On the one hand, it's the off-ramp or the off-path for the corporate forces represented by really all the other major, quote-unquote, candidates for the nomination, or it's Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And it's going to come down to cases in Iowa where the second choices are very important. If you can't get 15% in the room for your candidate, you either go home or you go to another corner where a candidate does have more than 15% or at least that much. So that's a very practical way in which building those alliances are absolutely crucial. And then getting to the convention in Milwaukee in July where the nominee will be chosen, again, I think it's quite possible that nobody will get there with a majority. And if Sanders and Warren can bury their egos sufficiently, the one who has fewer delegates of the two will release them, pull out of the race, and urge the delegates to go for the other. So Warren could withdraw and support Bernie or vice versa.
You know, I interviewed on this show Victor Tiffany a while back. He had Bernie or bust. And there's, you know, there seems to be a contingent who say, well, if it's not Bernie himself, then we're going to stay home. And this is a complex thing because, you know, I'll give you another example. When I saw you in 2016, you did a presentation with David Swanson, the peace activist. I've had him on my show. And David flat out said, this is during the primary season in 2016. He flat out said, don't cast any votes for any pro-war candidate. And there was Hillary, obviously. And, of course, in the general election, Hillary was the candidate. You were a Bernie Sanders delegate. You were actually very much involved with that. What was that like for you? And then how did you reconcile your vote in November?
Well, it was painful to see Bernie losing at the convention, of course. I was in the room with hundreds of other Bernie delegates when Bernie spoke early on in that convention week and said, we've got to support Hillary Clinton. And some people yelled out, no, no. Well, Bernie, as usual, was absolutely correct. He warned the dangers of a Trump presidency were too horrific to enable in any way. And we've seen the results. You know, let us count the uncountable, countless ways in which the Trump administration has been a blight on humanity and a threat to the future on climate and many other ways. It's just horrific. A lot of people have already died through lack of health care or nutrition because of this presidency. We could go on and on about why repeating this administration is absolutely unacceptable. And, you know, it's a shibboleth of sorts about some people will say in rather evangelical terms that choosing the lesser of two evils is unacceptable. I agree with Noam Chomsky, who has taken that on head on. He's recently done an interview with Truth Out where he said, or Truth Dig, and said, yes, he supports going for the lesser of two evils. And I think if we bring it down to our actual lives, we can see that that's important. If you have the choice of somebody hitting you over the head with a 2x4 or stabbing you in the stomach, you probably would prefer to be hit over the head if it's not too a hard blow. Or if where I live is, say, 50 miles from where I want to go to a meeting, I could walk. There's no bus transportation, but I could walk, or I could go in a vehicle that's fueled by gasoline. Well, being in a vehicle that's fueled by gasoline, it's arguably an evil, but having to take 2 or 3 days to get there, I would consider not to be a good option either. I'm making a choice, and we do that all the time. We make choice of evil choices all the time, and it's true politically. And I certainly agree with the idea, and Molly Ivins called this the Ivins principle or something like that. In a primary, you vote your heart. You vote absolutely who you support. That's certainly why I'm working hard to try to help, with many other people, help Bernie be nominated and elected president. But at the end of the day, when I'm looking at a ballot and it's Trump or a Democrat, whatever that Democrat is, I want that Democrat to defeat Trump. And there's, unless I'm into hallucinations, and I don't really hallucinate anymore, I don't seek substances to help me, but unless I am hallucinating, I don't think there's another way to prevent a Trump presidency other than to vote for a Democrat against him.
You know, a colleague of mine was very active in the Bernie campaign organizing in Santa Cruz. And in fact, I did benefits for Bernie back in early 2016. And so he's an older guy. And so at the, you know, after the convention, he, you know, told people, he says, well, now it's time to get behind Hillary. Well, he got, basically, he got ghosted. You know, nobody would talk with them. And I think that there's, it's kind of like, you know, those who fail to learn the lessons of history condemn the rest of us to repeat it. And I think that's one of those issues. And, you know, I've talked to people who said, well, if Republicans, if Biden is the candidate, they don't really want to vote for Trump, but if there's somebody who is at least partway, then they'll vote for that person. So let's imagine kind of a mid-case scenario, which is that a Democrat like Biden or Mayor Pete or Amy or one of those people ends up getting the nomination and winning. Then there's an entirely different strategy for after the election. It's kind of like being inside the tent rather than outside.
Yeah, I agree with that, because we need to, whether it's Obama or, heaven forbid, a Biden presidency, then you push and you never defer. And any policy that they're pursuing is wrong needs to be pushed back against and organized against. And it doesn't mean that then we in any way politically defer. And I think continuing to keep on the North Star, keep that course of that single standard, is really crucial. Right now, yes, it looks like it's possible. You know, Biden seems to be doing decently in the polls, pretty well. It could be Buttigieg. It could be Klobuchar. If the New York Times has its way, they endorsed her, or Elizabeth Warren. And this is a challenge that it's a struggle. You can call it a battle if you want, that's going on right now. But ultimately, we can only choose from the choices that are realistically in front of us, even as we struggle continually to create better choices.
Exactly. And I think that there's part of the uprising, as I see the great uprising, if critical mass of the heretofore uncritical masses actually trying to get it together, is that it's a recognition that what's been missing at the center of our political system is the one thing that can counteract the power of money, and that is the power of people. The power of people cohering together. And right now, there is no platform, there's no national way for people to converse outside the mainstream media, really, and outside the two political parties, which tend to polarize. A recent poll, I think it was USA poll in November or December, bottom line is most people in this country would much rather have, let's figure out how to solve the problems. Let's work this out. And I would imagine that if ordinary people got together including the ordinary people who voted for Donald Trump and the ordinary people who voted for Hillary or whoever else, that they would find that there's a lot more in common around these identical issues as opposed to the identity issues. So the Democratic Party has thrived to the extent of its thrive, which really hasn't thrived, on these identity issues, on women's issues, blacks, minorities, gays, lesbians, on and on and on. And that's apparently safe for the military industrial complex. They don't really mind, or the banks, they don't really mind those conversations. They kind of keep the two sides polarized and separated. How do you see creating real conversations that bring people who have left the Democratic Party because of, for various reasons, to recognize that by choosing the undemocratic party, they're shooting themselves in the head? How do we bring that into a real conversation in this country?
I think Bernie Sanders has blazed a trail in that direction, which helps to explain why he is absolutely despised by some very powerful rich people. And in its own muted, civilized way, the New York Times editorial, which was published Sunday night, endorsing Klobuchar and Warren, was very nasty towards Bernie, saying that he just was essentially, I'm paraphrasing, incorrigible, because he wasn't willing to compromise. And when you're trying to prevent so much human suffering that is preventable, then naturally you go out and you try to get everything you can. I mean, I give a quick example. Bernie held out on voting in the Senate for Obamacare, the ACA, until he could get a promise into the bill, billions of dollars for federally qualified health centers. And out where I live and really around the country, particularly in rural areas, it's because of what Bernie Sanders did, holding out, that we're able to get more funding, better reimbursement rates through Medicare and Social Security, or Medicaid, I should say, and Medicare, that has helped a lot of these clinics to survive. And holding to your principles and sticking with them as much as possible to get what is feasible, that's a positive. And Bernie has, although he wouldn't use this term all that often, he has presented a class analysis of society. He's looked at what will benefit most people. And I think that that's very threatening, as you say, to Wall Street, to the military-industrial complex, because, again, as you say, they're glad to talk about race. Not that they will solve the problem, which is often about economic exploitation, but they're happy to talk about almost anything other than the way in which we have an oligarchy that's circumscribing our possibilities. And I think it helps to explain why Biden, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, so much of the mass media, they really are trying to trash, politely or not, what the Bernie campaign is all about, because it's about class.
You know, and I guess the other step, and then of course Hillary came out with something very, very bitter and brutal toward Bernie. I think it was just today, which is the opposite of class, which is lack of class.
Yeah, really, really. I mean, how does one explain it? And it, you know, I say I do political analysis, not psychoanalysis, but I think this is called projection. Because here is somebody, Hillary Clinton, who falsely and repeatedly has accused Bernie of not working to get her elected against Trump, where he was working very, very hard, day after day, week after week, month after month, after the convention, to urge people flying around the country, speaking again and again, you must support Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. And yet she's gone around for 3 years saying that he didn't work to get her elected against Trump. What is she saying now? She's saying now, Hillary Clinton is saying, she can't commit to supporting Bernie Sanders if he's nominated.
Exactly. I mean, and again, as somebody asked the Swami at one of the shows recently, Swami, would you like to see Hillary run? And Swami says, absolutely. In fact, I volunteered to lead the mob that chases her. So, you know, so it really is hard, you know, to kind of pull together. There is a wonderful a movie about 20 years ago about the fall of Slobodan Milosevic in Yugoslavia called Bringing Down a Dictator. And it was initially a student movement, of course, supported by the USA, by the way, in parentheses, but it was a student movement that ultimately created a coalition of all of these multiple parties that disagreed with one another to form a united front in order to defeat Slobodan Milosevic. And the election, of course, was fixed. It was rigged. And the only thing that turned the tide was when the military chose to stand down and not defend the palace and not shoot at the students who are at the door. And because it was their cousins and relatives. And so that was how a dictator was brought down. It had to do with a very, very wide coalition of people who didn't like each other, who didn't like each other's political positions, but who recognized that for the sake of survival, they had to hang together. And I think that's really where we're at this year.
We really are looking and needing common ground, as you said, that can be built on. And those who want to maintain basically a system of oligarchy, they have their own de facto coalitions, even if they have their own rivalries. For instance, it's pretty well documented at this point that Jeff Bezos, reputedly the richest person in the world, owner of Amazon, Washington Post, Whole Foods, etc., he called Michael Bloomberg last year and urged him to run for president because he wants this guy. And you've got Mark Zuckerberg, who helped Pete Buttigieg do his hiring for top officials in his presidential campaign. And that's sort of solidarity of the super, super ultra wealthy. They know how to cooperate when push comes to shove. We've got to learn how to do that. And it sort of goes to your question earlier, Steve, which I think I neglected to fully answer, and that is about the Warren and Bernie forces. I think there are a lot of pressures on Warren to look for an opening because there was a perception in recent weeks her campaign was flagging. And so it has been called to my attention that some of her top aides, and I don't know the names, but it's been pretty well mapped out. Some of them worked high up in the Hillary Clinton campaign of 2016. No doubt, there's tremendous animosity from people who, like Ron Klain, who's supporting Joe Biden, but people who are in the corporate wing of the party and viscerally, in a personal way, a lot of the Clinton loyalists at the top, it's not an exaggeration to say they hate Bernie Sanders. And I think that Elizabeth Warren took some bad advice and basically sandbagged Bernie on the stage and in the moments after the end of the debate last Tuesday night. And I just hope she doesn't pursue that line.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with the final segment with Norman Solomon and talking about what our listeners can do and how we can focus our attention. Steve Bierman, this is Wiki Politiki. I'll be back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with Norman Solomon. We're talking about our current political situation, the primaries, and what's going to happen in the election itself. I totally agree that, you know, at one of these times, you simply have to look at the two choices. One is an open door, sort of, and the other is a closed door. And if you look at the damage that's been done so far, tremendous amount of damage. And I think part of it has been the immaturity of the electorate. And a lot of young people who went for Bernie stayed home. A lot of young people who are looking at climate change issues and et cetera, they stayed home. What indication is there that more people like that are going to be in the fold and being organized and registered to vote? What's going on in that domain, do you know?
Well, I believe that the Trump administration has brought some people up short who didn't expect or realize just how bad it would be and could be and could get. And I know there's a tremendous amount of organizing going on in various states, on campuses, for instance, for registration, for voter registration. And the polling, and this is sort of a double-edged sword, the polling that's just come out again shows that in California, for instance, but this is true pretty much nationwide, you go to people under 45 or so, and for the Democratic primary, Bernie is the huge favorite. He's wiping out every other candidate in the age group of people who became eligible to vote in the last 20, 25 years. And it's the opposite with older people. Bernie, ironically enough, being 78 years old, he doesn't do that well with older people. So one of the questions that comes to mind is, if Bernie is not nominated, what happens to a lot of, and with a lot of those really young people who are gung-ho enthusiastic for him? And if it comes to that, I think it's going to be crucial to reach out and say, look, a part of the loaf is better than just having a heel in the White House is going to kick you down the stairs again. So I think that's going to be a real challenge.
You know, my guest last week was Lenore Goldman, and she has been a longtime friend. And she's also a political activist. She was instrumental in the Michigan campaign in 2018 to end gerrymandering. And she's worked on many campaigns, and her approach is grassroots organizing for state house elections, because it costs a lot less money to do that, and you get to be with voters face to face, and perhaps focus on the issues that they care most about. And given the lying that goes on by the Republicans on a consistent basis, where in certain cases their candidates lied about their support for the Affordable Care Act. We support it. Of course, they didn't support it. But in the last minute, ads run on radio and TV, they proclaim their support for it. So in counteracting that sort of stuff, she suggests that if you want the most leverage, first of all, spend no time and no energy arguing with anybody about Trump. If there's people who support Trump, let him be. No argument about that. Don't waste your energy. And instead of fighting people on social media, focus that attention on supporting in any way you can through phone banking and et cetera, making sure early in the year, right now, that people get registered. So I want to say something that, you know, I consider myself an independent. But when I'm looking at exactly how horrific this this evil that we have, kind of like I call him America's balloon karma payment, which it's kind of popped up here. When I look at that, I think that the body politic, and that includes all of the organizations of Republicans who abhor Trump and who recognize him for who he is, I think that that's one of the it's one of these pivotal moments where there has to be the assertion of the body politic. If we want to survive, if we want to be healthy in the future, our first healthy act, the first act of the evolution, is to fire the first big shot and to act in accord to not just fire the Trump, but the Vichy Republicans who have been, or at this very moment, failing to hold him accountable because A, they're afraid of him. He is an intimidator. And B, because ultimately they agree with what he's doing.
Yes, I think that's a very good series of points. And if somebody hasn't become dissuaded from supporting Trump at this point after 3 years in office, then it is a waste of time to try to supplicate them. Part of the ideology and mythology from the Biden folks, you know, Biden says that Republicans will have an epiphany after Trump is gone, but it goes way, way deeper than that. And there's a claim that so many Republican voters are out there to be won by the Democratic candidate for president this year. I don't think the figures bear that out. The New York Times has published polling this winter showing that very few Republicans have strayed from supporting Trump. And the real differential is going to be turnout among young people, people of color, others who, as you mentioned, Steve, too often stayed home in 2016 rather than go vote. And that's really the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I think anybody who if you're looking at the Trump presidency, no matter what your political perspective, if you're looking at the Trump presidency as a clear and present danger, then the one thing that we could do as a body politic to reassert our health and well-being is to, en masse, de-elect the misleader and defeat that entire toxic political party, what it's devolved to, and then in the coalition, bring, you know, something that's never been tried. It's never been tried. My friend and colleague Richard Lang wrote a book called Virtual Country, and the idea behind that is an independent citizens, independent institution of society called National Town Square, where everybody gets an advisory voice and vote. And he calls it an ecosystem for civic engagement. What if there was an ecosystem for civic engagement where, what if we formed a citizens union, like consumers union, where because the facts have not been made clear by the leaders of both political parties, what would it be like if we had a way for people to engage beyond the two-party divide and actually create a movement from there that would ultimately be a social justice movement, because really, deep down, that's what everybody wants once they've been unfogged from the mind fog. Does that make any sense to you?
I think it does. Building independent institutions that are not in the thrall and under the de facto control of what has got us to this dire situation is really important. We need that kind of cultural resonance and strength.
I don't think individuals can do it as atomized, isolated people. We need each other. We're social beings. And it's not about the Lone Ranger. It's about group efforts where everybody's individuality is respected, but we pull together.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said something early on that I want to reiterate, and that is that this is a fractal conversation. It's happening on every level, and if people do not deal with their own internal psychological issues that, of course, are impacted by what's going on out there, right? Nonetheless, there is a psychological and perhaps even a spiritual evolution that needs to take place so that we the people, this entity called we the people, can really step into its full power. We haven't had this. We haven't really had this. We've had public opinion polls, but nobody really is cultivating public will. And perhaps there's that. How do we have these conversations that relate the macro and the micro? You talked about that earlier. How do we begin to integrate, as you said earlier, you know, the arts, the internal life that we have, the internal growth and well-being with this external political apparatus that seems to be unfixable and out of control?
Well, I believe that the major political discourse really discounts a lot of those internal experiences and people's, for lack of a better term, psychological health and yearnings, because as you're referring to, we have some very shared yearnings about the future. And a lot of the reasons why these movements seem to come out of nowhere as far as the mass media are concerned is that the punditocracy is talking to itself, sort of like a closed loop. So when we have had these ultimately very powerful movements emerge, they've been able to emerge really under the media radar, under the political establishment radar. And I think that, again, to talk about the Bernie campaign as an example, when he announced in early, mid-2015 he was running for president, the conventional wisdom was he would remain in the single digits in terms of his capacity to get votes against Hillary Clinton. And I think that the yearning for a healthy society, very broadly and deeply defined, is what has made his campaign strong as much as anything else. Yes, we have an amazing transcendent candidate, but Bernie would have gotten nowhere without this resonance that speaks to people's inner lives and their yearnings.
Yep. I think that's a very good point. Otto Scharmer, in writing about the election, said that there were three choices. When a society is in decline, that seems to be us, people either will go backward, they'll go forward, or they'll go for the status quo. And Hillary didn't represent going forward. She represented the status quo. And there was so much displeasure with the status quo that my guess is that Bernie would have done a lot better, because he would have actually captured that fervency that many people devolved to Trump to, because he was at least stood for something. Does that make sense?
It does, and it goes to your point that Hillary Clinton chose in 2016 as her slogan, "America is already great." Can you think of a more status quo slogan than that?
Exactly. We're staying where we are. I mean, and here, you know, again, talking about a progressive party that lost all of its power to progress. And, you know, she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Any final, in our last few minutes, any final ideas or anything that you want to share about this election and how people can get out of this sense of anger and powerlessness and begin to do something constructive?
Well, on the last point that we were just discussing, I think, unfortunately, that's what is being offered by, say, the so-called front runner now, Joe Biden. It's let's go back to the way things were 4 years ago. And it's sort of back to the future, but
yeah.
People in the past didn't like their present as an indicator of the future. And right now, I think that there are just these clashing forces involved. Obviously, it's a very contentious election. It will probably be more so. And keeping our eyes on the prize, as the historic saying goes, really requires that we look deeper at our own values and the future. And on that note, just trying to recoup what was before is not going to do it. People don't want to go back to what wasn't working for them in the past. And that means creating a different vision, whether it's the Green New Deal or Medicare for All. That's where the future is for a more humane society.
Yeah, and I think that this is a very interesting election time, because in order to actually prevail over the greater evil that's out there, it's going to be necessary to create some kind of a coalition and some kind of a way of working together, at least in order to get to what we want. And it seems like the we really have three political parties in this country. And if we were a European parliamentary democracy, we might find that the Hillary Party and the Bernie Party would be able to form a coalition government. That's how I'm looking at it. Whoop, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's form that coalition government. Thank you, Norman Solomon, for being with us today on WikiPolitiki. We'll be back with you next week.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.